bloating chronic disease epidemic that has made the Fauci generation, children born after his elevation to NIAID kingpin in 1984, the sickest generation in American history, and has made Americans among the least healthy citizens on the planet. His obsequious subservience to the big ag, big food, and pharmaceutical companies has left our children drowning in a toxic soup of pesticide residues, corn syrup, and processed foods, while also serving as pincushions for 69 mandated vaccine doses by age 18, none of them properly safety tested. When Dr. Fauci took office, America was still ranked among the world's healthiest populations. An August 2021 study by the Commonwealth Fund ranked America's healthcare system dead last among industrialized nations, with the highest infant mortality and the lowest life expectancy. If healthcare were an Olympic sport, the U.S. might not qualify in a competition with other high-income nations, laments the study's lead author, Eric Schneider, who serves as Senior Vice President for Policy and Research at the Commonwealth Fund. Following World War II, life expectancy in the U.S. climbed for 5 decades, making Americans among the longest-lived people in the developed world. IQ also grew steadily by 3 points each decade since 1900. But as Tony Fauci spent the 1990s expanding the pharmaceutical and chemical paradigm instead of public health, the pace of both longevity and intelligence slowed. The life expectancy decrease widened the gap between the U.S. and its peers to nearly 5 years, and American children have lost 7 IQ points since 2000. Under Dr. Fauci's leadership, the allergic, autoimmune, and chronic illnesses which Congress specifically charged NIAID to investigate and prevent have mushroomed to afflict 54% of children, up from 12.8% when he took over NIAID in 1984. Dr. Fauci has offered no explanation as to why allergic diseases like asthma, eczema, food allergies, allergic rhinitis, and anaphylaxis suddenly exploded beginning in 1989, 5 years after he came to power. On its website, NIAID boasts that autoimmune disease is one of the agency's top priorities. Some 80 autoimmune diseases, including juvenile diabetes and rheumatoid arthritis, Graves' disease, and Crohn's disease, which were practically unknown prior to 1984, suddenly became epidemic under his watch. Autism, which many scientists now consider an autoimmune disease, exploded from between 2 in 10,000 and 4 in 10,000 Americans when Tony Fauci joined NIAID, to 1 in 34 today. Neurological diseases like ADD, ADHD, speech and sleep disorders, narcolepsy, facial tics, and Tourette syndrome have become commonplace in American children. The human, health, and economic costs of chronic disease dwarf the costs of all infectious diseases in the United States. By this decade's end, obesity, diabetes, and pre-diabetes are on track to debilitate 85% of America's citizens. America is among the 10 most overweight countries on Earth. The health impacts of these epidemics, which fall mainly on the young, eclipse even the most exaggerated health impacts of COVID-19. What is causing this cataclysm? Since genes don't cause epidemics, it must be environmental toxins. Many of these illnesses became epidemic in the late 1980s after vaccine manufacturers were granted government protection from liability and consequently accelerated their introduction of new vaccines. The manufacturers' inserts of the 69 vaccine doses list each of the now common illnesses, some 170 in total, as vaccine side effects. So vaccines are a potential culprit, but not the only one. other possible perpetrators or accomplices that fit the applicable criterion. A sudden epidemic across all demographics beginning in 1989. Our corn syrup, PFOA flame retardants, processed foods, cell phones and EMF radiation, chlorpyrifos, ultrasound, and neonicotinoid pesticides. The list is finite, and it would be a simple thing to design studies that give us these answers. Tracing the etiology of these diseases through epidemiological research, observational and bench studies, and animal research is exactly what Congress charged Dr. Fauci to perform. But Tony Fauci controls the public health bank book and has shown little interest in funding basic science to answer those questions. Is this because any serious investigation into the sources of the chronic disease epidemic would certainly implicate the powerful pharmaceutical companies and the chemical, agricultural, and processed food multinationals that Dr. Fauci and his 20-year business partner Bill Gates have devoted their careers to promoting? As we shall see, his capacity to curry favor with these merchants of pills, powders, potions, poisons, pesticides, pollutants, and pricks has been the key to Dr. Fauci's longevity at HHS. Is it fair to blame Dr. Fauci for a crisis that, of course, has many authors? Due to his vast budgetary discretion, his unique political access, his power over HHS and its various agencies, his moral authority, his moral flexibility, and his bully pulpit, Tony Fauci has more power than any other individual to direct public energies toward solutions. He has done the opposite. Instead of striving to identify the etiologies of the chronic disease pandemic, we shall see that Dr. Fauci has deliberately and systematically used his staggering power over federal scientific research, medical schools, medical journals, and the careers of individual scientists to derail inquiry and obstruct research that might provide the answers. Dr. Fauci's Pharmination. While some Republicans bridled warily at Dr. Fauci's accumulating power and seemingly arbitrary pronouncements, the alchemies of political tribalism and the relentlessly stoked terror of COVID-19 persuaded spellbound Democrats to close their eyes to the damning evidence that his COVID-19 policies were a catastrophic and dangerous failure. As an advocate for public health, robust science, and independent regulatory agencies, free from corruption and financial entanglements with pharma, I have battled Dr. Fauci for many years. I know him personally, and my impression of him is very different from my fellow Democrats, who first encountered him as the polished, humble, earnest, endearing, and long-suffering star of the televised White House COVID press conferences. Dr. Fauci played a historic role as the leading architect of agency capture, the corporate seizure of America's public health agencies by the pharmaceutical industry. Lamentably, Dr. Fauci's failure to achieve public health goals during the COVID pandemic are not anomalous errors, but consistent with a recurrent pattern of sacrificing public health and safety on the altar of pharmaceutical profits and self-interest. He consistently prioritized pharmaceutical industry profits over public health. Listeners to this audiobook will learn how, in exalting patented medicine, Dr. Fauci has, throughout his long career, routinely falsified science, deceived the public and physicians, and lied about safety and efficacy. Dr. Fauci's malefactions, detailed in this volume, include his crimes against the hundreds of Black and Hispanic orphan and foster children whom he subjected to cruel and deadly medical experiments, and his role with Bill Gates in transforming hundreds of thousands of Africans into lab rats for low-cost clinical trials of dangerous experimental drugs that, once approved, remain financially out of reach for most Africans. you will learn how Dr. Fauci and Mr. Gates have turned the African continent into a dumping ground for expired, dangerous, and ineffective drugs, many of them discontinued for safety reasons in the U.S. and Europe. You will hear how Dr. Fauci's strange fascination with and generous investments in so-called gain-of-function experiments to engineer pandemic superbugs give rise to the ironic possibility that Dr. Fauci may have played a role in triggering the global contagion that two U.S. presidents entrusted him to manage. You will also hear about his two-decade strategy of promoting false pandemics as a scheme for promoting novel vaccines, drugs, and pharma profits. You will learn of his actions to conceal widespread contamination in blood and vaccines, his destructive vendettas against scientists who challenge the pharma paradigm, his deliberate sabotaging of patent-expired remedies against infectious diseases from HIV to COVID-19, to grease the skids for less effective but more profitable remedies. You will learn of the grotesque body counts that have accumulated in the wake of his cold-blooded focus on industry profits over public health. All his strategies during COVID, falsifying science to bring dangerous and ineffective drugs to market, suppressing and sabotaging competitive products that have lower profit margins, even if the cost is prolonging pandemics and losing thousands of lives, all of these share a common purpose, the myopic devotion to pharma. This book will show you that Tony Fauci does not do public health. He is a businessman who has used his office to enrich his pharmaceutical partners and expand the reach of influence that has made him the most powerful and despotic doctor in human history. For some listeners, reaching that conclusion will require crossing some new bridges. Many listeners, however, intuitively know the real Anthony Fauci and need only to see the facts illuminated and organized. I wrote this book so that Americans, both Democrat and Republican, can understand Dr. Fauci's pernicious role in allowing pharmaceutical companies to dominate our government and subvert our democracy, and to chronicle the key role Dr. Fauci has played in the current coup d'etat against democracy. Please go to the Children's Health Defense website for the acknowledgments, endnotes by chapter, updates to data, and new information that becomes available on any of the subject matter covered in this book. Chapter 1. Mismanaging a Pandemic. My friend, have you ever been in a quarantine city? Then you cannot realize what you are asking me to do. To place such a curse on San Francisco would be worse than 100 fires and earthquakes, and I love this city too well to do her such a frightful hurt. Rupert Blue, Public Health Service officer in charge of dealing with the 1907 plague outbreak. Blue subsequently served as 4th Surgeon General of the U.S. and President of the American Medical Association. 1. Arbitrary Decrees, Science-Free Medicine. Dr. Fauci's strategy for managing the COVID-19 pandemic was to suppress viral spread by mandatory masking, social distancing, quarantining the healthy, also known as lockdowns, while instructing COVID patients to return home and do nothing, receive no treatment whatsoever, until difficulties breathing sent them back to the hospital to submit to intravenous remdesivir and ventilation. This approach to ending an infectious disease contagion had no public health precedent and anemic scientific support. Predictably, it was grossly ineffective. America racked up the world's highest body counts. Medicines were available against COVID, inexpensive, safe medicines that would have prevented hundreds of thousands of hospitalizations and saved as many lives if only we'd used them in this country. But Dr. Fauci and his pharma collaborators deliberately suppressed those treatments in service to their single-minded objective, making America await salvation from their novel multi-billion-dollar vaccines. Americans' native idealism will make them reluctant to believe that their government's COVID policies were so grotesquely ill-conceived, so unfounded in science, so tethered to financial interests, that they caused hundreds of thousands of wholly unnecessary deaths. But as you will hear, the evidence speaks for itself. Peer-reviewed science offered anemic, if any, support for masking, quarantines, and social distancing, and Dr. Fauci offered no citations or justifications to support his diktats. Both common sense and the weight of scientific evidence suggest that all these strategies, and unquestionably shutting down the global economy, caused far more injuries and deaths than they averted. Dr. Fauci was clearly aware that his mask decrees were contrary to overwhelming science. In July 2020, after switching course to recommend national mask mandates, Dr. Fauci told Nora O'Donnell with InStyle magazine that his earlier dismissal of mask efficacy was correct in the context of the time in which I said it, and that he intended to prevent a consumer run on masks that might jeopardize their availability for frontline responders. But Dr. Fauci's emails reveal that he was giving the same advice privately. Moreover, his detailed explanations to the public and to high-level health regulators indicate he genuinely believed that ordinary masks had little to no efficacy against viral infection. In a February 5, 2020 email, for example, he advised his putative former boss, President Obama's Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Burwell, on the futility of masking the healthy. On February 17th, he invoked the same rationale in an interview with USA Today. A mask is much more appropriate for someone who is infected and you're trying to prevent them from infecting other people than it is in protecting you against infection. If you look at the masks that you buy in a drugstore, the leakage around that doesn't really do much to protect you. Now, in the United States, there is absolutely no reason whatsoever to wear a mask. During a January 28th speech to HHS regulators, he explained the fruitlessness of masking asymptomatic people. The one thing historically people need to realize that even if there is some asymptomatic transmission, in all the history of respiratory-borne viruses of any type, asymptomatic transmission has never been the driver of outbreaks. The driver of outbreaks is always a symptomatic person. Even if there's a rare asymptomatic person that might transmit, an epidemic is not driven by asymptomatic carriers. Consistent with Dr. Fauci's earlier statements, the peer-reviewed scientific literature has steadfastly refused to support masking the healthy as an effective barrier to viral spread, and Dr. Fauci offered a citation to justify his change of heart. A December 2020 comprehensive study of 10 million Wuhan residents confirmed Fauci's January 28, 2020 assertion that asymptomatic transmission of COVID-19 is infinitesimally rare. Furthermore, some 52 studies, all available on NIH's website, find that ordinary masking, using less than an N95 respirator, doesn't reduce viral infection rates, even, surprisingly, in institutional settings like hospitals and surgical theaters. Moreover, some 25 additional studies attribute to masking a grim retinue of harms, including respiratory and immune system illnesses, as well as dermatological, dental, gastrointestinal, and psychological injuries. 14 of these studies are randomized, peer-reviewed placebo studies. There is no well-constructed study that persuasively suggests masks have convincing efficacy against COVID-19 that would justify accepting the harms associated with masks. Finally, Retrospective studies on Dr. Fauci's mask mandates confirm that they were bootless. Regional analysis in the United States does not show that mask mandates had any effect on case rates, despite 93% compliance. Moreover, according to CDC data, 85% of people who contracted COVID-19 reported wearing a mask, according to Guten Tag. Dr. Fauci observed in March 2020 that a mask's only real efficacy may be in making people feel a little better. Perhaps he recognized that what masking lacked in efficacy against contagion, it compensated for with powerful psychological effects. These symbolic powers demonstrated strategic benefits for the larger enterprise of encouraging public compliance with draconian medical mandates. Dr. Fauci's switch to endorsing masks after first recommending against them came at a time of increasing political polarization, and masks quickly became important tribal badges, signals of rectitude for those who embraced Dr. Fauci, and the stigmata of blind obedience to undeserving authority among those who balked. Moreover, masking, by amplifying everyone's fear, helped inoculate the public against critical thinking. By serving as persistent reminders that each of our fellow citizens was a potentially dangerous and germ-infected threat to us, masks increased social isolation and fostered divisions and fractionalization, thereby impeding organized political resistance. The impact of masking on the national psyche reminded me of the subtle contribution of the duck and cover drills of my youth, drills that sustained and cemented the militaristic ideology of the Cold War. Those futile exercises reinforced what my uncle John F. Kennedy's Defense Secretary Robert McNamara called national mass psychosis. By suggesting to Americans that full-scale nuclear war was possible, but also survivable, ruinous investments in